This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Live Bet Saturday right here on VSiN. Mark Melusis, Will Hill alongside with you. What's going on, Will? How have you been?
The Moose, what's going on? We got a lot to do here. Some baseball, Major League Baseball, College Baseball World Series, an NBA Game 7 Finals here where we haven't had that in almost a decade. It's funny because you and I, and we'll get to the baseball here that's about to start, you and I were doing the show. I was just thinking about this right before Pacers-Cavs Game 1 second round. I mean, what odds would you have needed? What if I told you, you know, 6 weeks ago, you know what, the Pacers are not only going to upset the Cavs in Game 1 and win the series, but they're going to be one win away from winning a championship. It's just, it's one of the more remarkable runs I can remember in any sport. And if they're able to do it, man, that's on the short list. It might be the most incredible, improbable NBA championship of all time. So we'll get into that. We'll get into the baseball. But good, man. It should be a fun show. How's everything with you?
Good. You know, Will, everything's good. You know, it's hot in the Northeast now. You're in Connecticut as well. We're both in Connecticut. So it's the heat wave has hit. Summer has begun. Unfortunately, you know, and we both love baseball and we've got a couple games getting going. So we'll get into that. But, you know, it's a little sad to see the Stanley Cup Finals come to an end. Congratulations to the Florida Panthers. And they're celebrating like the end of the world, which is great, which you expect for hockey players. And nobody celebrates like hockey players after winning the Stanley Cup. And we only got one NBA game left. Right, we got the NBA draft right around the corner, the NBA offseason, you know, football's right around the corner. Training camp, you think about it. I mean, training camps are getting going in like 4.5-5 weeks. The National Football League, and right now we got a lot of baseball, which is great every single day.
Yeah, and how about the four-day stretch here with the NBA Finals Game 7? You take Monday off, you take Tuesday off, and you wake up on Wednesday, and you got a draft. That's a very strange scenario. It used to be on a Thursday, which when you have a Game 7 Finals, which we don't have often, that's a quick turnaround. But to go from playing Game 7, imagine being in the Pacers front office. I mean, you're sitting there waiting to win a championship or lose a Game 7 here, and you got to turn around and draft, you know, form a draft. Same thing, Pacers, Thunder. You got to draft in a couple days. Just very quick, very strange turnaround, but it's fun. That'll be fun to Wednesday, and they've made it now a 2-day event, which I think is good. So it drags it out, gives a little more juice. And then, like you said, you look up 5 weeks from now, we got the Lions and the Chargers, the Hall of Fame game, like July 29th in that range. And once it gets here, it gets here. So a little bit of a lull here in the sports calendar, but still a lot of fun. And yes, exactly, 100%.
Yeah, no, listen, it's great. We got a lot of baseball to get into. We got three games getting going here in the 4 o'clock hour, 4 o'clock Eastern time, where both Will and I are situated. Rangers taking on the Pirates out in Pittsburgh. Texas right now is minus 106, the Pirates minus 110. Total in the game is, Will, is sitting at 8.5. Any thoughts on this one? Texas and Pirates out in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, a classic interleague rivalry here between the Rangers and the Pirates. I would take the Rangers, if anything. I like their bats better than the Pirates. You just wait for the bats to come around for Texas because they have not hit well all year. But you look at the names in the lineup with Seager and Garcia and Langford and all the prospects, and you figure that that's at some point, you know, the positive regression is coming here for the Rangers. We'll see if they're going to turn it around. They're two games under 500, could possibly be sellers at the deadline, but it's an American League where nobody's out of it. Rocker has not been good. He hasn't been good away from home. He was once a big-time prospect. I'm sure people remember, you know, drafted by the Mets. There was a medical issue, you know, bonus issue. He never ended up signing, and then he goes back into the draft. He ends up with the Rangers. Like I said, he hasn't been good. Last start out, maybe encouraging. 5 shutout innings against the White Sox, only 1 walk, 6K. So the ability is there. He was a big-time prospect when he was in college at Vandy. We'll see if it can translate at some point. It would be Texas first 5 or nothing, but I understand if people just look at Rocker and say, hey, I can't bet that guy, but I can't bet the Pirates either. They can't hit, don't love their bullpen. So Texas or nothing for me in this one.
All right, how about the Red Sox in San Francisco taking on the Giants? Obviously, a lot of irony there with Rafael Devers being traded last weekend by the Boston Red Sox to the San Francisco Giants. 4:06 first pitch. Boston's plus 104. The Giants are a slight minus $1.22 favorite, and the total in the game, Will, is sitting at 7.5.
I like the Giants here. I think that, and I like them for the full game. The Boston bullpen has been taxed here. They've used Chapman. They've used Whitlock multiple days in a row here. So they're going to be gassed a little bit. They're going to have a hard time if they have a lead or it's tied late. you know, San Francisco is going to have an advantage. San Francisco has played better at home here. I like better than Bayo. Bayo has been shaky when you look at the advanced stats. Just he doesn't get swings and misses. He struggles with his control, but he's skated by. He's put together some good outings, but I think there's some negative regression coming from him. One prop I looked at, Devers to draw a walk is plus money, plus 128, plus 130 in that range. Shop around, try to find the best number. There's not much protection for Devers in this lineup. Bayo can be wild. An intentional walk cashes this bet if he gets up in, late in the game and there's a man on second, one out, and they just pitch around him or walk him. I think Devers at plus money to draw a walk is a good look here.
How about the Braves after the 6-2 loss last night down in Miami against the Marlins? Holmes on the mound this afternoon for Atlanta, Perez on the mound for Miami. Atlanta is a minus 158 favorite. You look at Miami plus $1.34. The total in the game is sitting at 8.5 right now, Will. I would take the Braves to bounce back. I mean, it's amazing. All Atlanta needs to wake up is to see the Mets, and they woke up over that stretch against New York. That's the way they had them reeling, and all of a sudden it became a house of horrors down in Atlanta once again. And you think, all right, well, Atlanta's built up a little bit of momentum. There they go on the road on Friday night. They lose to the Miami Marlins 6-2. They're a heavy favorite this afternoon with Holmes on the mound. I would expect Atlanta to bounce back after the subpar performance last night.
Yeah, you say it's been a house of horrors for the Mets. This is only like the third decade or so that that place has haunted the Mets. They were up 4-1. I think it was the Tuesday night game. Comfortable lead the Mets had. Ozuna clears the bases. They lose in extra innings. They lose Wednesday. They lose Thursday. And all of a sudden, Atlanta is the undertaker. They're getting up out of the coffin, and they're back to life here. They did lose Friday night to the Marlins, but I'm with you. Perez is good, has good stuff. I liked backing him a couple years ago when he first came up, but we've seen this with guys when they get hurt and they have surgery, it just takes them some time. Sometimes they can get the velocity back, but the control, the command doesn't come right away. We've seen it with Alcantara on the Marlins. We've seen it with other pitchers. Perez has not been sharp here. He's not really had great command, great control. Obviously an advantage to the Braves lineup, and Holmes has been good. Last time out, 15 Ks against the Rockies. I know it's the Rockies, but that gives you an indication of what kind of stuff Holmes has. So I think this price, I know people don't want to lay $1.55, $1.60. People, you know, they want to bet a dollar to win a dollar. They feel like if you're laying this kind of price, it's not worth it. But I do think there's some value here on the Braves. So I did bet the Braves.
You know, it's been a strange season for Atlanta. Let's be honest, Will, when you look at it. They come to life a little bit against the New York Mets, but it's a team that entering that series, and you were dead on correct, the Tuesday night game, they had a 4-1 lead to the Mets, and the Braves come rallying back. Ozuna with the bases clearing double, they lose the game in extra innings. But going into that game, they were 13 games back in the National League East. I mean, this is, you know, an Atlanta team that had high expectations coming into it. You know, their win total coming into the year was in the low 90s. It really hasn't clicked. Now people are going to say, well, time is still on their side, but you can't be losing games if you're Atlanta coming off the momentum that you were able to gain against the New York Mets. You can't come off of it and lose game one against Miami or lose this afternoon against the Miami Marlins. That's why even though it's a heavy price you're paying, I would be really surprised, even though the fact that they're still, you know, they're five games under the 500 mark, I'd be surprised if Atlanta doesn't come away with a win this afternoon.
I'm with you. What did you think? We mentioned San Francisco and Boston. What did you think? I haven't talked to you. What did you think of the Devers trade? Were you as shocked as anybody? Because I got off the air. I was doing the show on Sunday, the live bet show, and literally minutes, a minute or two after, I see the alert. And I don't do this often. I double checked because I mean, that's a fake trade. Somebody's screwing around. Somebody got hacked. And then once you see, you know, Jeff Passan and these other guys confirming it, I was shocked they traded him. They just swept the Yankees. He just hit a homer earlier. It looked like the Red Sox are finally starting to click. And not only was I shocked they traded him, but I kept reading for more names. I was like, that can't be the return. That's what made me think it was fake. Hicks, Harrison, and a couple prospects. We never know how this stuff will turn out with the prospects. But I was shocked by the return, the lack of return, and just the timing of it. What was your take here on the Devers trade?
Yeah, just like you, Will, I was stunned, you know, when I first saw it, because, you know, you get off the idea that, you know, first off, they have they're playing their best baseball of the year. And I know there's been a lot of drama with Rafael Devers. They just got done sweeping the Yankees. They won two or three of the previous series in the Bronx against the Yankees, right? And so you're saying to yourself, all right, yep. Well, you know, they called up their top prospect in Roman Anthony, which generated a lot of buzz, and Red Sox fans were clamoring for that. And then all of a sudden you trade Rafael Devers, and then you don't even get the top prospect from the San Francisco Giants in return. For the San Francisco, I mean, it's a home run, right? If you're Buster Posey, it's a deal you got to go out there and make, because the Giants have been trying to, in free agency, if you've been paying attention, we all have, right? So for the baseball fan, they've been trying to get a big-time free agent to sign in San Francisco, whether it be, you know, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, all these, and everyone said thanks, but no thanks, and they went someplace else. So they needed to bring in that big time bat. And listen, Devers might have been a pain in the rear end up in Boston. The one thing Devers does is Devers hits. Against the Yankees. He hits in big games. He's got lefty power. I mean, there's a lot to like about what Rafael Devers goes out there and does. And clearly, the way that he was handled by Boston rubbed him the wrong way, to where he was not a happy camper, even though he was getting the big money and got the big contract. So the Giants weren't able to lure anybody in free agency. But what they did get was they got a big-time bat in a trade, and they did not pay a king's ransom for him. They probably paid 60, 65 cents on the dollar for Rafael Devers, which is amazing.
Sure is. You know, you said it perfectly. He's not a good hitter. He's a great offensive player. Now, he's not going to hit the same in San Francisco. Boston, you know what?
No,
he's not. Fastball away, pitch away. You just flick your bat, and it's going to go off the monster. It's not the same in San Francisco. It's cold. It's not great hitting weather. The dimensions aren't favorable. But that guy, man, you never want to see that guy up in a big spot if you're the other team. So I completely agree. Big-time bat for the Giants, and it's hard when you scratch your head and just look at what the Red Sox have given away in recent years. Betts, Chris Sale, which doesn't get enough attention for what a disaster that trade was for Grissom, and now Devers without a lot coming back the other way.
Think about that. I mean, if you're a Boston fan, you're crying in your clam chowder. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's Will Hill. I'm Mark Melusis. We got all the baseball for you. We'll preview Game 7 of the NBA Finals. We're taking it right up until 7 o'clock Eastern time. It's Live Bet Saturday right here on VSiN.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Live Bet Saturday. Mark Melusis and Will Hill alongside with you on this beautiful Saturday on right here on VSiN. And got a lot to get into. We kicked off. We'll give you some thoughts on the 4 o'clock baseball in that window. We'll touch upon the night baseball, keep you updated on everything and the wheelings and dealings and everything that's going on in the diamond. But, Will, you hit upon it. To answer your question that you posed to me when we kicked off the program this afternoon in terms of the first show that you and I ever worked together, and that was Game 1, yeah. Pacers Cavaliers. If I ever thought that it would be Indiana, Oklahoma City, Game 7, sitting here on this, you know, Saturday, June the 21st, looking ahead to tomorrow night, the odds would be long. Like, I'm not an odds maker, but the odds would be, I mean, you would have gotten a lot of bang for your buck. You know, I didn't think they were going to beat Cleveland. They did. I kind of like the Knicks in their series against the Eastern Conference Finals in the end.
Me too.
You know, the Knicks lost because they weren't as good of a basketball team. And now you get a Game 7 tomorrow night against Oklahoma City, in which, give Indiana credit, I think you hit upon it, like, in terms of historical impact and perspective, might say it's, you know, arguably the, you know, the greatest run, you know, the run that, you know, the greatest upset in NBA history. I mean, it's hard to think that, you know, Indiana was nearly a 7-1 dog in this series against Oklahoma City. And here they are. They got one game. They got 48 minutes of basketball to win an NBA championship. It's remarkable. Great job by Rick Carlisle. Great job by TJ McConnell, Pascal Siakam. Look at what Obi Toppin has given them off the bench. They've made Oklahoma City sweat. And I think you've seen the inexperience, or quote-unquote immaturity, of the Thunder here as these NBA finals have gone along.
All of the concerns about the Thunders have come to light here. And they might be, 48 hours, whatever, 36 hours from now, they're holding up the trophy and all those concerns go by the wayside. They're too young. They don't have a second star. They don't have a third star. But, you know, Williams comes and goes. Holmgren has not been good in this series. He's shooting 35%, 11 points a game. He doesn't look like, you know, the dominant player he could look at, like, at times. So those concerns have come to light. You know, and you said most improbable run in NBA history. I would say in major sports, baseball, basketball, you know, NBA is just NFL. NFL is single elimination. Baseball, there's some randomness once you get in, but I don't care. And maybe there's a hockey team out there. I can't remember a more improbable champion in my lifetime. I would say maybe the 07 Giants. Remember that team, I think, was 3-5 at home, barely, you know, limped into the playoffs. won all those games on the road, upset the Patriots. So maybe that one counts. But this Pacer team, I saw somebody on Twitter posted this. Somebody bet them 85 to win the 85 to 1 to win the title, not before the season or middle of the season, like 6 weeks ago. I think it was April 29th. So, fairly recently. This is just, this doesn't happen in the NBA, and this would be a shocking, shocking title. I ultimately, and I'm curious what you think, I don't think they get it done. I'm terrified to bet against them. I'm terrified to doubt them. How could you not be? You can only touch the stove and get burned so many times before you say, you know what I'm not going to do anymore is touch the stove. At some point, you learn your lesson with this team. But OKC, they've got issues on the road, but this game's not on the road. They've played much better at home. They led game one at one point by 15. They led game two at one point by 23, and they led game five at one point by 18. They've built up big, big margins here. Now, maybe they come out a little tight. I understand all of that. And if it's tied with 4 minutes to go, I'll probably be live betting the Pacers. I want no part of OKC, but they played much better at home, like I said. And I do think they win here. And I actually think the 7.5, again, terrified to bet against them, but the 7.5 is probably a little cheap when you consider game one was 10.5, game two was 11.5, and game five was 9.5. Now you're getting a nice 2-point discount, 3-4 point discount from where you had previous games. So I think OKC gets it done. I'd be slightly surprised if they lost, but how could you be shocked at this point? The Pacers are, the Pacers are a sports movie. That's really what they've become here. So I like OKC. Do you have any feel one way or another for this game, side or total?
I think the way you're looking at the game, Will, is logical. I mean, I do. I think you look at Oklahoma City, the home and road splits. I think they're decidedly more dominant at home as compared to on the road. The one thing that's got to come to an end, I can't hear about Oklahoma City and this historically great defense after what I've seen in this series. I really can't. Those conversations to me have got to come to an end. But as long as they win the title, I guess that really doesn't matter, right? That's good for conversations, good for the debate shows. Other than that, they've accomplished their goal, a 68-win team. During the course of the regular season. Here's the one thing I'd be a little bit leery of is the inexperience, and I would say immaturity of Oklahoma City. Indiana played that game in game six. We don't want them celebrating our home court. And we've seen in these playoffs, right? We saw it game three, Minnesota, Oklahoma City. They won that game by 40, right? We saw game five, Knicks, Pacers, right? Was it a decidedly different Pacer performance in game six back at home? For sure, right? The Knicks played that game like they didn't want to lose on their home court. They didn't. They went back to Indiana and the Pacers went out there and daylighted them, right? There was no game seven and the Pacers went out there. Now we're talking about a game seven, which is nothing better. And, you saw the line open up at 8.5 and now it's down to 7.5. And I think there are people that look at it and say, maybe it's just Indiana's year. Maybe they're going to find a way. Maybe the inexperience or immaturity of Oklahoma City comes back to haunt them a little bit. I'd agree with you. I think Oklahoma City wins. My head is telling me Oklahoma City wins. They're better at home. Indiana can't play as well as they're not going to get 20 off the bench from Obi Toppin. They're not going to get similar performances that they got in game six and a game seven on the road, all of that. I think the Thunder obviously will be a little bit looser. They'll be able to play in front of their home crowd. They'll deal with the energy of that home crowd, all of those things. But I'm interested to see if Indiana can make them sweat in the second half and how Oklahoma City responds. Because the one thing, Will, that you look at Indiana this year in these playoffs is they've been really good at making teams, putting teams in uncomfortable positions. And those teams usually, when they're in uncomfortable positions, don't really respond all that well.
Yeah, and OKC looked tight in game six. They came out, and it's funny, it was 10-2, and you think, all right, maybe OKC has solved the Indiana puzzle here, and they're going to be holding up the trophy. 10-2 OKC, they had won game five pretty comfortably. They won game four. I thought this time last week, game four was the turning point of the series where OKC, all right, they tied it 2-2. They erased the deficit. Now they're in good shape to win it, and maybe they still do. But, that was a pretty lackluster effort Thursday night in game six. I mean, they got run out of the building. They're down 30 after three quarters and they got out hustled. I mean, not to be, go to all
yeah,
the
but Will, here's what bothers
stuff,
me. Here's what bothers me. I don't mean to interrupt you, but here's what bothers me is they played that game. Oklahoma City did like they had a game in hand. Like they did. 100%. Instead of going out there and keeping their foot on the throat, they played that game like, oh, you know what? Even if we lose, we're going back home and, we'll be A-okay. They're not going to go out there and beat us at home. Like, that's the thing that bothers me about that game. And I saw that from Indiana. I was at the Garden for Knicks Pacers game five, right? And I saw Indiana. I was like, this is not what Indiana's all about, right? And now listen, they ended up, you know, laughing in the end because they eliminated the Knicks in six games. So maybe in the end, Oklahoma City wins this game by daylight. Everyone celebrates. Everyone can talk about them being a great defense and, you know, how they're historically great. And we could talk about their point differential during the course of the regular season, everything. Or maybe Indiana, you know, was able to build off something and maybe they're able to find a way to win. Because I agree with you, Will. You brought up the 07 Giants. I think it's a fair comparison. The difference would be is that the 07 Giants built up a little bit of momentum off that final regular season game against New England, where they started to believe off that, right? Where Coughlin played his starters. But they went on the road Tampa, on the road Dallas, on the road Green Bay, won all three of those games, and then defeated the New England Patriots, who were undefeated out there in Glendale, Arizona. It's, you know, arguably the greatest Super Bowl run in ever. You look at this Indiana team, if you think about it, and they go through, they go through Milwaukee, they go through Cleveland, they go through New York, and then they go through a 68-win Oklahoma City team to win an NBA title as nearly a 7-1 dog. I mean, it is a remarkable NBA championship. It really is.
Yeah, and it's a sport where you don't get this stuff because it's best out of seven, and basketball is just not conducive to upsets when, you know, like the other sports are. Football, all right, team gets hot. Giants had a pass rush. They had a quarterback. Single elimination. Crazy things happen. You see that in the NCAA tournament. But best four out of seven, this is legit, and it's a best four out of seven, and the Pacers haven't had to play a game seven. So these have been thorough victories. I mean, they beat the Cavs in five as the lower seed and the big underdog. So, again, I wouldn't be shocked if Indy's holding up the trophy. How could you be at this point? So I'm excited for it just from a sports fan standpoint. I mean, I know the ratings haven't been great. Small market. You could say all this stuff, man. This is awesome. Game seven, NBA Finals. Wow. What an epic choke this would be by the Thunder. They were minus 1,800 to win the series 2 days ago. I saw Indy at 12-1. I was doing the show with humans. Like, man, I'm really tempted by the Pacers 12-1. We kind of talked it through. I was like, nah, I'm not going to bet it. Boy, 12-1 2 days ago. All he needed was two wins, and one of them was at home. So I can't wait for this game. It should be a lot of fun.
Want to make smarter football bets this season? Start with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, grab your football special at the early bird rate of $175, giving you full access from now through the Super Bowl. That includes our NFL betting guide, the ultimate playbook with team breakdowns, power ratings, and season-long best bets. You also get a daily best bet email from our expert host and guest, live and on-demand shows with the VSiN Watch app, deep analytics, and betting tools on VSiN.com. Don't miss the early bird deal. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to lock in your early bird football special for just $175, and make sure to do that now. It's Live Bet Saturday. He's Will Hill. I'm Mark Melusis right here on VSiN. All right, it is Live Bet Saturday here. Mark Melusis and Will Hill with you. We've got a Game 7 NBA Finals tomorrow night out in Oklahoma City. The Thunder, a 7.5-point favorite over the Indiana Pacers, but no better two words in all of sports, as a cliche goes, Will, than a Game 7. And that's where we're going to be able to sit back, relax, grab some popcorn, favorite libation, whatever it might be, and watch a Game 7 and see who the heroes end up being. We got a lot of baseball going on right now in the top half of the ninth inning. The Milwaukee Brewers all over the Minnesota Twins, 9-0. The Cincinnati Reds leaving, the St. Louis Cardinals out in St. Louis, 5-2. They're in the bottom of the eighth inning. Top of the sixth inning, a wild one out in Chicago. A lot of runs in this one. The total sitting right now at 22.5. Why? Because the Cubs leading the Seattle Mariners 10-6. And they're in the top half of the sixth inning. The White Sox right now trail the Toronto Blue Jays 4-1 in the middle of the sixth inning. And three games I got going underway in the 4 o'clock hour. Two teams have leads already. Pirates and Rangers, they're scoreless, bottom of the second inning. Texas right now plus $1.32. Pittsburgh minus 170 in the game. The total sitting at 6.5. The Red Sox right now trailing the San Francisco Giants 1-0 in the bottom of the second inning. And the total in that game sitting at 5.5, and the Atlanta Braves right now over the Miami Marlins 1-0, top half of the second inning. Atlanta coming back up to bat after scoring a run in the first, so they lead it early. They were a minus 158 favorite to begin it. They're a minus 230 favorite right now, and the total in the game, Will, is sitting at 7.5.
Yeah, you and I both like the Braves here. I like the Giants, and I lean towards Texas. So 1-0 Giants, 1-0 Braves, no score, Texas, Pittsburgh. Yankees, I don't think we've talked about this game. I think that was before we got on here. Yankees carried a no-hitter until the eighth. Earlier today, Schmidt was pulled. Brubaker comes in. Check swing. Looked like it could have been strike three on Sanchez, former Yankee, then a base hit. So did you have a problem with the Yankees pulling Schmidt in that scenario or no?
No, I don't. I mean, I really don't. Especially, I mean, 15 years ago, I think we look at starters a little bit different. Schmidt's been a guy that's been often injured for the New York Yankees. You know, starting pitching outside of Max Fried. Rodon's been good. Hit and miss the last three or four starts, but he had a 7 or 8 game stretch right. where he was really, really dominant for the Yankees. I think they're going to lead with all the positivity. So in today's day and age of analytics, open up the Excel spreadsheet, Will. I've got no issue with it. 15, 20 years ago, I think we looked at Major League Baseball starters significantly different than we do in today's day and age.
Yeah, and we were talking about this last night doing the show where it was Mizorowski who carried a perfect game until the seventh inning, but he was right around like 75, 80 pitches. And I was thinking, oh, man, will they let him go? Will they let him try and do this with 115, 120 to end up becoming a moot point, which I'm sure the Brewers and management were relieved because they didn't have to make that uncomfortable decision. There was a walk and then a homer. So perfect game, no hitter, all gone. So, you know, like you said, different game. It's funny, though, how 100 is just the magic number now.
Go ahead. Well, right, and you think you draw back to the comparison to the Arkansas no-hitter, right, in the College World Series. He threw 114, 115 pitches and was throwing the ball 98 miles an hour. I think his final pitch was 98 on the gun.
And I just don't get why, just because 100 is a round number, I know all of the data of like, all right, third time through the lineup and you want to keep these pitchers healthy, but what, it just, I'm a little suspicious. And I know there's a lot of research behind it, but why is it 100 just because it's a round number? Like, why is it not 92 or a 102 or 106? Like, why is 100 the magic number for so many of these guys? I just feel like it's just kind of a lazy or a cop out to be, oh, it's 100, it's a round number. That's the number that, you know, we can't go too much over. So look, these pitchers get hurt all the time with them being babied. So maybe you should just let them go an extra 15, 20 pitches, build up that tolerance, build up that arm strength. They can't get hurt any more than they already do because these pitchers are constant. I mean, every time you can't go 2 or 3 days without saying, oh, this guy's done for the year. This guy's getting Tommy John. And these guys, they go on the IL. We don't see them for, you know, 2 years or so. So maybe the answer is letting them pitch more. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's an inexact science, and I think it's depending on the pitcher. And I think when you look at Clark Schmidt, the history of injuries that Schmidt has, even when they drafted him, you know, I think he had Tommy John surgery immediately after they made him a first-round draft choice coming out of college, or he was coming off of Tommy John surgery when they drafted him. So I think, and Schmidt's battled some injuries here. They like his upside. He's been a guy that they thought well of. They think that they're going to need him for the long haul, which is not obviously being the case. So, you know, they'll sacrifice the possibility of throwing a no-hitter in order to maintain that he stays healthy the rest of the way. But it's an intriguing conversation. Listen, especially in a game where Friday night was frustrating, the Yankees lose 5-3, and then you show up on a hot, sultry Saturday afternoon in the Bronx, and the Yankees are hitting home runs left and right. Volpe, who struggled, hits a home run. Ben Rice hits a home run. Escara jumps in offensively. He does everything. I mean, and the Yankees get healthy on a really, underperforming Oriole team that, you know, fired their manager about 5 weeks ago. So, you know, the Yankees got healthy today, but you're happy that Schmidt pitched as well as he did, and you're happy that the Yankees bounced back the way in the style and fashion which they did. One New York team that's really struggling, Will, is the Mets. I mean, think about what the Mets and where they, I mean, it was a week ago they were getting swept at home by the Tampa Bay Rays. Then they go down to Atlanta, get swept by the Atlanta Braves. Then they go into Philadelphia last night. They lose to the Phillies, a team that now is in first place in the National League East. You know, they're down 2-0. They get the back-to-back home runs by Alonso and McNeil that tie the game up at 2. Then their bullpen implodes. You know, they end up getting, you know, they end up losing that game by daylight. It ended up being a 10-2 final, and now they're back to work tonight, which is a team that is just, you know, 14 games over the 500 mark. The Phillies are in first place in the National League East, and what is a division that right now looks like, even though the Braves are trying to claw themselves back into it, a division that looks like it's a two-horse race.
Yeah, and man, the Mets, like you said, were sitting pretty. I mean, they swept Washington. Senga's pitching a gem really from the moment Senga hurt his, what was it, hamstring that Thursday afternoon game about 9-10 days ago. They had a get out of the fire in the ninth inning that day. Diaz pitches out of it, but Senga injury, sweep, lose to Philly. And it's a dangerous word as a bettor to sit here and say, oh, they've lost six in a row, five in a row, four, whatever it is, they're due. You could go broke playing this due stuff. I mean, the Yankees were due on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, the Yankees were due a lot of these games too. The Mets had been due. So, I mean, that leads into the game tonight. I actually would have a hard time backing them tonight. I know Canning's been pretty good, but he has struggled against lefties. You got a handful of pretty good ones here in Philly, a place where, look, we've talked about it here in the Northeast. It's hot. The ball's going to travel. The ball's going to carry. It's good hitting weather. I don't know that Canning can continue, you know, the success he's had. I know he's a ground ball guy, and that helps, especially in a small ballpark like Philly. But Abel has been pretty good here for Philly, filling in the Nola spot. So I wouldn't be surprised if this seven-game losing streak turns into an eight-game losing streak. I lean Philly on the game. Do you have any thoughts, take anything you're interested in betting in this Phillies-Mets game?
Yeah, I'm going to be the sucker. I'm going to be the sucker on the roulette wheel where it's come up, you know, red or black seven straight occasions. I'm going to go the opposite color. I'll be the sucker, you know, and you're right. You could go poor and you can lose a lot of money by going that route, thinking that the Mets are too good of a team to think that they're now all of a sudden going to lose eight straight. And there's no pitching edge. Abel's been better. I mean, Canning gotten off to a really good – it's been rocky his last three starts when you look at the New York Mets. Yeah. And, you know, Mendoza's talked about the Mets starting rotation or the starting pitching hasn't gotten deep enough into these games, Will. And the other issue that the Mets have is the lineup's not producing. I mean, Alvarez at 24 is not the player you expect him to be. Lindor's really cooled off. Alonso has covered up for a lot of his Met teammates with the way that he's been able to hit the baseball. You know, has Juan Soto lived up to the $765 million contract up until this point in time? He has not. You know, I'll dabble. I don't love it. I can understand why you like the Phillies a little bit more than you like the Mets tonight. I don't love it. I think the Mets, though, find a way to scratch across a W tonight. But there are a lot of leaks on that Mets ship right now. There's no doubt about it.
Is part of your brain, even part of this handicap, saying, all right, they're due, they can't lose eight in a row? Is that factoring?
Yeah, of course it is. Yes, yeah. Of course it is. No doubt about it, Will. Yeah, they're due. Like, you know, think about the Met fan right now. Imagine if they go out there, get swept by the Phillies this weekend, and then begin a four-game set with the Atlanta Braves Monday night out at Citi Field. What that building's going to be like?
Yeah, no, it's... And look, there's not the sense of urgency it used to be in baseball because so many more teams get in, although the National League gets crowded and there's no lock to get in. But with six playoff spots, it's not like it used to be with the four, which I actually liked better, the four. There was more urgency. You're playing 162 of these games. There should be some urgency. It should hurt to get swept by Atlanta and Philly. Now it's like, you know what? You don't want to lose these games, but there's just a lot more rope. There's a lot more margin for error now with these extra spots. But, you know, your points are certainly well taken here. I think the Mets can hit ultimately. I think their lineup would be fine. I'm still more concerned the pitching. Is this sustainable with the Peterson, the Cannings of the world?
Yeah.
And now you're throwing injuries to Senga and McGill. So I still have more concerns about the pitching than I do the lineup.
Yeah, and Frankie Montas is going to make his return, but he has been terrible in his rehab starts. Yeah. Betting on sports, why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. Firstbet.com, that's the number one, STBet.com. Use promo code VSIN200, VSIN200, to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Head to firstbet.com and do it today. We got all the baseball. Look ahead to Game 7 of the NBA Finals as well. And we'll look ahead to the NBA Draft, too, which gets going this week. He's Will Hill. I'm Mark Melusis. It's Live Bet Saturday right here on VSIN.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Live Bet Saturday. Mark Melusis and Will Hill alongside with you right here on VSIN. We've got all the baseball for you, looking ahead to Game 7 of the NBA Finals, which gets going tomorrow night out in Oklahoma City. And Will, you hit upon it early. Strangely enough, when you look at the NBA calendar, you know, a few days after, you know, the NBA Finals comes to a conclusion, we crown a champion, whether it be Oklahoma City, who's a 7.5-point favorite, maybe it's the Indiana Pacers, who pull off, you know, the cherry on the top of what has been, you know, a jaw-dropping, miraculous run for the Indiana Pacers, something that you and I both, as huge sports fans, probably have not seen anything that has been, you know, really that you can compare it to. Maybe the 07 Giants, which you brought up earlier on the program, it's a fair comparison. But the NBA draft gets going a few days later. So we do know this. I mean, we do know that Cooper Flagg is going to be going number one overall to the Dallas Mavericks. And the lean, unless they change their mind, and I had an opportunity to interview Jay Billis this week from ESPN, asked him the question by all stretch of the imagination, is Dylan Harper the second best player in this draft? He goes, no doubt about it. Unless the San Antonio Spurs trade the pick, or even if they do, it would be somebody moving up to number two overall to get Dylan Harper, because he said the draft really starts at three. So it's going to be Flag one, Harper two, and then the draft begins with the Philadelphia 76ers with that third overall selection.
And it's been very strange. I've seen the headlines. I've tried to get to the bottom of it, half-hearted. I'm not like I'm sitting around the clock trying to investigate it. Ace Bailey apparently tanking his stock. I don't want to play for Philly, canceling dinners, getting people to schedule stuff and just no showing for stuff. I don't understand that. It sounds like there's some question about who's advising him, because I threw the question out there on Twitter. I was like, why does Ace Bailey not want to go to Philly? And people, they're a mess. They're not going to work. I mean, they've underachieved in the playoffs. I wouldn't say they're a mess. Look, their best player is always hurt and kind of, underperforms in the playoffs. But you're looking at teams behind them or around the Sixers, Hornets, Wizards, Jazz. You really want to go to those teams. So I'm not sure why Bailey doesn't want to go to Philly. My guess is that he just feels like he's blocked in terms of playing time, and it's not going to hurt his stats and eventually hurt his contract. So Edgecombe, I think, is probably the guy at three and D guy. Again, Philly's got a lot of options too, and a lot of questions to ask themselves. What do we want to do? Who do we want to build around? Do we want to build around Maxey, McCain, and our pick, or do we think Embiid, if we nurture him properly and space him out and rest him properly, we can compete in a wide open East? And let's maybe use this pick for either somebody who can help us right away, in terms of a ready-made prospect, or trade it for a ready-made player. So there's a lot of moving parts there. My guess, just reading the tea leaves, would be it's Edgecombe. But this stuff has been we're in Connecticut. You can't bet this stuff here, so there's not been a lot of markets. I was talking to Humans last night, who's in Vegas. They're not posting stuff, so it's hard to bet this stuff. But my guess is, like you said, Flag, Harper, then Edgecombe, and then who knows? Obviously, Trey Johnson for Texas, he's a smooth shooter. Reminds me a little bit of Ray Allen. The way he can shoot the ball, he's got a beautiful touch. Knipple, the kid from Duke, was going to be in the mix here, top five. So it would concern me a little bit with Bailey, and got to throw Harper in there. The fact that those two, lottery picks, top 10 picks, couldn't make the NCAA tournament. It was an issue with Fultz and Simmons, and people said, oh, no big deal. It's the pros. It doesn't translate from college to the NBA. Don't worry about the fact they didn't win. I want you to win a little bit. I mean, 68 teams get in the tournament. You can't get your team in the tournament. And they were, I think they're like a 12 seed in the Big Ten tournament. That would concern me somewhat, but I understand the skill set here with Harper. What if I put you on the spot here and said, you got to come up with a top five here, mock draft, Flag, Harper, I guess it starts at three. What are you looking at here, three through five?
So I would go, Flag, Harper, Edgecombe. I would go Ace Bailey fourth to Charlotte, and then I would go Con Knipple fifth to Utah.
Makes sense.
That's where I would go. I someone was telling me that, kind of breaks it down that after Harper, the next four guys are in any discernible order, depending on how you look at it, is really, Ace Bailey. When you're talking about pure NBA prospects, and everyone's a little bit different, right? Ace Bailey, Con Knipple, Trey Johnson, and VJ Edgecombe, right? And it depends on how you look at the player, right? Who has the higher ceiling? A lot of people look at VJ Edgecombe. When you look at Con Knipple, the thing that scares you is doesn't necessarily have an NBA body, is a guy that, filled his role, that secondary piece down in Duke, better defensive player than he's given credit for, is a very, very good outside shooter. Trey Johnson, as you mentioned, very feathery touch. The interesting thing about Ace Bailey, it's strange. Is it really Bailey, or it's and I've heard Steve Peichel talk about it. Last year was a dumpster fire for Rutgers. The expectations, the amount of money in NIL when they go out there, and Harper was, I mean, Harper was a great player in the area at Don Bosco. You know, his son Ron, his dad Ron was living in the area playing golf all over the place, and you know, Dylan Harper was a guy that decided to stay home in that area and go to Rutgers. And you know, the thing about him is that he can play on the ball, he can play off the ball. The knock on Dylan Harper is he's not a great outside shooter. Okay, is that something necessarily can work on? Think about Ace Bailey is, you know, there's the flashy plays with Ace Bailey, but is there really, does he have the great court awareness? How long do you need to wait for Ace Bailey in order to develop into a player and give him the guidance, right? So you're drafting a player for potentially like 3 or 4 years down the line. And, you know, I think you hit upon it where, you know, he's pushing back on the idea of going third overall to Philadelphia because I don't think he's going to play. Because how is he going to play when you look at it? Unless injuries, and listen, injuries do happen. And more times than not, it happens with Philadelphia. When you look at Joel Embiid, when you're looking at, you know, Paul George, the Philadelphia 76ers have not been the epitome of health. But that's the knock on Ace Bailey is that, you know, yes, he has these plays that are show his jaw-dropping athleticism. But is he a complete basketball player entering this draft process? He's not. Does he need to be coached up? Does he need a little bit of experience? Does he need do you need to kind of handle him with kid gloves and nurture him along the way? For sure. But you're going to draft a guy and think that if you give him the time and experience, when he's only 18 now, by the time he's, you know, 22, 23, you know, you might have an NBA All-Star on your hands. You may, you know, if he lands in the right spot, if he lands in the wrong spot, you know, Ace Bailey, he may never realize his potential in the NBA. That's the rub when you're looking at him coming out of Rutgers.
Yeah, one of our listeners who tweets, you know, us pretty frequently says, "I'm a Rutgers grad. I'm a Rutgers fan. I'll find it here in a minute." He says, "That guy better that kid better go to the right organization. Otherwise, he's gonna be playing in Turkey in 3 or 4 years because the maturity, man, I wouldn't trust him. As somebody who watched him all the time, I wouldn't trust him. It sounds like he's not getting, you know, the best advice. He's not coming off well here in the draft process. So we'll see how that plays out." To go back to baseball for a second, I'm not sure if you saw this, but Rafael Devers, welcome to the San Francisco Giants, a 2-run homer the opposite way against his there former team, and the Giants now lead 3-0. So Devers against Bayo hits one to left field. So mention how the dimensions might be an issue. It's not Fenway. It's not the Green Monster with the, you know, the short wall. Well, no problem for Devers so far as he hits one into the seats. A no doubter the other way. Boy, he's got great opposite field power. So Giants with a 3-0 lead over the Red Sox.
Well, he's like a bull that sees red when he sees the Boston Red Sox. Let's be honest. Yes. I mean, Rafael Devers, when he sees Boston, he's going to go out there. You know, he goes out to San Francisco, Will. He's like, "I'll play any position. I'll play anywhere. You want to play me in the outfield? It doesn't matter. All I want to do is win." In Boston, all he wanted to do was play third base. If it wasn't third, you know, he wasn't happy just being the DH. He didn't want to pick up a first baseman's glove, all that. So he was a happy camper being traded out to San Francisco. And good for the Giants. They get rewarded for making the big-time trade. And the Boston Red Sox, that's another deal, as you mentioned, you know, Sale, Mookie Betts, and now Rafael Devers. I mean, the guys that they have traded away from that team, and then what they haven't gotten in return is ridiculous.
Sure is. And the Sale for Grissom one is such a bad one. I mean, I understand they got frustrated. He was always hurt, a lot of money, but you trade him away, and the second you trade him, he goes on to win a Cy Young, and you get a guy who's Grissom, who's what is he even in the big leagues? Like, you don't even hear from him. That's such a bad one. And what they got from Betts is just, that's a ridiculous return. What, Verdugo, Jeter Downs, who's not even in the big leagues anymore. I think he's playing in another country somewhere and another piece. I mean, that's just an awful return. All right, you want to tell me you're going to trade these guys? You got to get more back than what they got.
Before the line moves, the sharp plays at sharpplays.com is already there. They don't chase the market. They move it. You're not going to outmuscle billion-dollar sports books or full-time professional bettors on your own. Bet with the sharp plays. You don't have to. Powered by cutting-edge AI and trusted insider sources, the sharp plays delivers the edge that serious bettors rely on. You'll get free betting reports, real-time alerts, and market-moving insights, all delivered right to your email or on X. And this isn't just overnight insight or startup. Sharp Plays has a documented track record dating all the way back to 2011 with receipts, public logs, and results right there on the site. SharpPlays.com, trusted by pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at SharpPlays.com. Quint Mills is going to join the program next. Get his thoughts on the College Baseball World Series, some MLB. We'll do that next. He's Will Hill. I'm Mark Melusis. It's Live Bet Saturday right here on DSIN.